This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. I moderated a panel discussion earlier this month at an event organized by several of the Federal Reserve banks. It was part of a series the Fed is doing aimed at understanding the role structural racism plays in this economy and what the Fed, corporate America, and policymakers can do to help build an economy that works for everyone. This event focused on racism and employment. Academics, workers' rights advocates, and business leaders were there to give their ideas on how to limit the effect of racism in the labor market. Rebecca Dixon, the executive director of the National Employment Law Project, focused on occupational segregation.
A just and inclusive economy is only achievable by centering racial equity. The fact that a disproportionate share of people in underpaid, insecure, and unsafe jobs are Black and brown is not inevitable, nor is it accidental. Opportunity is segregated in the United States.
I wanted to dig into that a little deeper, so we circled back with Rebecca Dixon. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
As we heard in that clip, you brought up the fact that opportunity is segregated in the United States. And the term occupational segregation was thrown around a lot in that panel. Can you talk to me a little bit more about how this shows up in the economy?
So we definitely know that housing is segregated, and we all have a pretty good understanding that in some places education is segregated, but the labor market is also extremely segregated. You know, almost 90% of occupations in the United States, even after you account for education, are racially segregated. The lowest paying jobs that are most dangerous and most dirty are filled by people of color, especially Black folks and Latinx folks.
You mentioned also in that clip that this type of segregation is not accidental. That implies that there's some sort of action that perpetuates this.
Right. So the major action that perpetuates this is employment discrimination. Black folks are not hired into jobs, whether they're qualified or not. They're not promoted when they're in those jobs. And I would say the other piece of this is systems and structures. So if the competitive jobs now require more education, but we have Black and brown folks in neighborhoods and schools that are not serving them, we can see how that deficit then translates to being undervalued in the labor market as well.
You laid out some solutions, one of which was investing in the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Can you remind people what that agency does and why you think it needs more investment?
Yes. So when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 passed, it was supposed to get rid of discrimination in employment. And the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission was set up to actually monitor and enforce that law. And what we saw when that happened was big progress in terms of integrating the labor market, but that has basically been flat since the 1980s. And that is because the EEOC is actually a politically mediated organization. And so we've had administrations that have been more friendly to the EEOC, in which cases they've been able to have more staff and actually close more investigations. Where we currently are is that the staff for the EEOC is actually 150 investigators less than what they had a decade ago. And so when folks are bringing claims, it's very hard often to get relief or to get your issue resolved or to receive a settlement.
I want to play a clip from the panel that you were on with the Federal Reserve series on racism and the economy. It included Josh Bolton, who's president and CEO of the Business Roundtable, who was also at the event. And here's what he had to say.
We're not going to litigate our way to racial equity in this country. That is just plain. We're only going to do it if it's a broad-based societal commitment.
He talked about commitments from Business Roundtable members to improve their recruitment and hiring practices, doing more to train and promote employees from within. What's your response to that?
My response is that the law really does lead policy. So we did have employers that made changes to the way that they hire, to the way that they promote when we had the EEOC come into being. And employers didn't do that voluntarily. They did it in reaction to this law. And when you have an agency that is, you know, everyone knows that it's weak and understaffed, that is not going to encourage folks to actually follow the law or even go beyond the law. And I would say that there are employers who are trying to do it right, but we can't depend on the honor system. We can certainly use the law to sort of set out the foundation and the marker.
You also talked about needing the political will to challenge labor market inequities. We've got a government that can't even seem to agree on the basics to deal with our current economic and, more importantly, health crisis. What is your take on the actual chances that there is the political will to address these issues?
I'm actually excited about this question because we've all lived through the summer with the racial reckoning and the uprisings. And I think that this awakening and awareness is going to lead to pressure to actually create that political will. And I think with a change in administration, we will have the opportunity for that administration to actually put in folks who prioritize not only enforcing the law, but also doing things proactively to help employers comply with the law.
Rebecca Dixon is Executive Director of the National Employment Law Project. Nice to talk with you again.
Thank you for having me, Kimberly.
We've got a link to the video of that entire event at marketplace.org. And if you really miss Kai this holiday weekend, you can check out the first event in the Fed series, which he moderated. There's lots of fascinating conversations there about the effects of racism in the broader economy.